Hey everybody, welcome. It's time for Atomic Radio Hour, the post-nuclear podcast, a show that dives into the wreckage that is post-apocalyptia. If you're new here, welcome. Thanks for checking us out. There's been a huge spike to the channel, and I can only thank the Fallout show, Fallout on Prime, for that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the show, but before I even say anything, I'd like to start out with saying, New Vegas is canon. It's always been canon. It never wasn't canon. Arrows exist to show the passage of time. If you like the show and you'd like to hear a little bit more about my review of it with my friend Kyle, there will be a link somewhere, if not in the description, maybe on screen somewhere currently, that'll take you to a companion podcast to this show called The Vault Boys. It's me and my friend Kyle, and we review the first four episodes in the first part of it, and then the last four episodes, and we talk a little bit about if New Vegas actually is canon or not. And it is, and it always was, and it never wasn't canon. Sometimes you gotta read in between the lines. But welcome to the show. My name is Vince. You guys are great as always. We got one person in the audience tonight. Hello, Marcus. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking some time out of your day to watch these episodes get recorded live. And if you like the show in any capacity and you want to see them get filmed, recorded live, check out the Patreon. In the Patreon, there is a tier that grants you access to this perk, to this ability to watch these episodes get recorded live every Wednesday at about 8:30 Mountain Standard Time. Some things we have to talk about. I've been no stranger to my criticisms of Fallout 4, and as time has gone on, the game has grown. I mean, even today at work, I was having a conversation about Fallout 4, saying that it's grown on me. The scale of the game is impressive. The game itself is... But there's two things that I really, really want to talk about in regards to Fallout 4, so we're going to break this up into two parts. First off, if you're getting into the Fallout series, one of the best places to start is Fallout 4. It's the most optimized game, it's the best looking game, it's got the best mechanics, it has a decent story, the world is fun, the scaling of the world is really, really good. Like, that's the one thing that I feel like we forget about when we think about Fallout 4, is how big the scale of the world feels. I remember the first time I played it being in downtown Boston and like looking up with my dog and being like, oh wow, this is fascinating. Like how big everything feels. So genuinely, I think Fallout 4 is the best place for you to start, and you're in luck if you've either picked up the game. All of the Fallout games, as of this episode coming out, I think the sale is over. I think it ends on the day before this episode comes out. All of the Fallout games are on sale. I just bought all of the DLC on Xbox for New Vegas that I didn't have, because I only ever played Dead Money on Xbox. I bought the rest of the DLC. I have a copy of New Vegas here physically, but it goes with my collector's edition of New Vegas, and I didn't want to split up the set. So I just bought a digital copy of it, and it cost me less than $10 for the whole thing. And I have a physical copy of Fallout 4, but Fallout 4 on Xbox Game of the Year Edition with all the DLC was $10, and all of the DLC was $12.50. So I just bought a digital copy of the game, even though I already own it physically. What I'm getting up to at this point is, as of April 25th, we are finally getting the next-gen update for Fallout 4. And that means it's coming to PS5 and the Xbox Series X and S on April the 25th. It has performance mode and quality modes, increased resolution and 60 frames a second, stability improvement and fixes, PC widescreen support, and various free Creation Club items. Now, if I remember correctly, that includes some Enclave stuff, which is cool, coinciding with the show. There's a bunch of new people that are coming in. They're going to get to experience the game and the series through the eyes of a player character and not just you on that fourth wall seeing into this world. My biggest gripe with Fallout 4 is that it's a voice protagonist. I love that in the other games, the older games, your character doesn't have a voice, so you kind of implant yourself onto them. And I tweeted this out recently. Lucy might be my favorite protagonist from a Fallout series, and she's voiced. That's nuts, if you know me. But more Fallout 4 is always a good thing, especially if new people are going to be playing it, especially if we're getting people that are new to the series. It is the best time that I can think of to be a Fallout fan is right now. Like, and that's a beautiful thing to be able to look at it and realize going, this is the best time for it right now. And not like, oh, you know, the best time was in 2010 or 2012 or 08 or whatever. Right now is like, honestly, one of the best times. Marcus in chat, I co-sign that Fallout 4 is a great game. It is a great game. It's fantastic. I wouldn't have a shelf dedicated to stuff, even though it felt like, for me at least, a little bit of a rough patch. I think honestly, the reason why it was such a rough patch for me is because I watched this one thing with that was an interview with Todd Howard, and he was saying a lot of people play their games and will say to them, oh, your games haven't been good since X. And since they make one game a decade, or they make one game every half a decade, every 8 years, people's first experience to them that they spend so much time is let's just say Oblivion, right? Because I had a friend who loved Oblivion and hated Skyrim, or just didn't like Skyrim as much. He played Oblivion for the first time when he was like 11, and then played Skyrim again when he was, let's say, 17. So 6 years goes by without a game, 6, 7, 8 years goes by without a game, and he really lived in Oblivion, and Skyrim comes out, and it's not Oblivion. And I think that's what happened with me in Fallout 4, is that I liked it, but I feel like the voice protagonist was such a different thing for me that I just wasn't used to, that it just, I don't know, it was never going to be 3. And I knew that going into it. And when I brought this up to someone recently, they said, yeah, but New Vegas came out. And I was like, yeah, New Vegas came out. But I played New Vegas and I was like, this is fine, whatever. I prefer 3 and continue to play 3 way more than I ever played New Vegas. All of this being said, go play a little Fallout 4 if you get a chance. And one of the best things about Fallout 4, which I was a little upset that what had happened with the story, but I wanted to bring it to you because I thought it was kind of interesting. And I'm sorry, I always say that I could never pronounce this fella's name correctly, but Emil Pagliarulo, this is him on Twitter. Given the great vibes recently and the millions of amazing Fallout fans, in parentheses, that's you, and parentheses, I feel like it's time to finally share an unknown link between Fallout 1 and Fallout 4. Remember the Fallout 1 opening movie? Annexation of Canada? Same guy. No, not the shooter. So for all of the new Fallout fans, when you start Fallout 1, it's a popular motif for the Fallout games to start with the TV and pull out. Fallout 1 does. It's one of my favorite openings in a game ever, really. An opening cinematic is in Fallout 1, where it shows you a modern for Fallout time. So for us, like a retro-futuristic Adam Punky 50s TV, and it shows like a Corvega for sale, and it spins around, says the price of it, and then it shows like buy war bonds. And then as the TV keeps being pulled out from, it shows two US soldiers in power armor. So before the Brotherhood of Steel, they're military. They're wearing power armor, and one guy just blindly shoots some guy with his hands behind his back, screaming and shouting for his life. They shoot him, and then they both look at each other and laugh, and then they look at the camera, and they just kind of wave at the camera, and then you see the destroyed city, and then the game starts. Great music. Here's the vault. We're out of a water chip, right? So all of Emil said that the other guy, not the shooter, the guy who waves at the camera, was, that's Nate. That's the same guy. He then retorted back with a thread of three things that says, oof, I wanted to share what I thought was a cool tidbit without realizing how divisive it might be. Again, this is Emil on Twitter. I get dumb when I get excited, and I get excited a lot. Emoji with a guy baring his teeth. Not every bit of Fallout info I share is automatically canon. Nate is not a war criminal. Post 2 in this thread. When your world and character building, you have a lot of headcanon, you're always sorting ideas. Early on, we talked about that being Nate in the video. He had been through hell as a soldier. Every day was another unknown horror. This is one of them. So, internally, it was a cool nod to OG Fallout and a way to fictionally frame the character. It wasn't shared with the player because it was never meant to be who you think Nate is. For a player, Nate Soldier Pass is whatever you think it is. That's canon. And if that's canon, my Nate's a war criminal, because that makes him cooler. I read that and was just like, "Wah, that sucks. I wanted him to be a war criminal. That sounded like a fun time for everyone to be had." Then I saw someone commenting on it or retweeting it or like retweeting it with a little quote on it saying that the annexation of Canada, Nate and Nora meeting, them being together, all of it doesn't align. And again, if Emil is talking about it saying, hey, this is an idea that we had, then it's an idea we had. And if I can say, hey, that's my Nate, then that's my Nate. My Nate's a war criminal. Marcus in chat says, yeah, that war crime mystique really does it for me. What do you mean by that exactly? Are you saying it in a positive way? Are you saying it like in a negative way? Like, because I want to know how you feel about this genuinely, because I want to tell you how I feel about it. Because I've kind of built up my own story in my head, which I want to know what you think. And Marcus has told me recently that he started playing Fallout 4 for the first time. So I'm really curious to see how you feel about this and what I'm going to say how I feel about it. Marcus says, I was being sarcastic, but I agree that four fictional characters adding a new dimension is really neat. And that's kind of where I'm at a little bit, because I'm so against Nate having a voice because we refer to him as Nate. We don't refer to him as some people refer to him as a soul survivor, but I feel like most people that I talk to when I talk about the game talk about him as Nate. I kind of see it as Nate saw hell, goes to the annexation of Canada. He's in Anchorage. He sees hell. He sees the horrors of war, right? He sees war crimes happening all the time. He gets to come home and have a family and have a kid and kind of start over. And that's why he's so positive, because he saw everything get taken away from him in Fallout 4. Physically, mentally, spiritually, whatever. He loses everything. And then he can look on his past and his past reflect back onto him and say, wow, I really effed up. I really messed up. I see how what I did was evil, and he can kind of change his ways. And that's why a big thing that Nate says is we just have to take things one day at a time. And that works for you if you don't believe that Nate is a synth and all of his memories are fake, which is a conversation for a complete different day, which is kind of the camp I'm in, the synth camp. But yeah, like Marcus just said, nothing like a good redemption arc. Yeah, the redemption arc, the hero's tale, they're two of, if not the biggest, literary devices in a story to tell somebody's story. And I enjoy it. I just like the idea that Nate is a war criminal. On the tweet that I was reading off of the screenshot, the top comment was Juicehead going, my Nate is a war criminal. So if you're enjoying Fallout on Prime, if you're here because of it, you're new and you want to know a little bit more about the series, about the lore, about everything, there's an episode that I don't know if you picked up on. This little quick thing. I've been seeing it go around Twitter. I saw IGN cover it, whatever, but I wanted to talk about it. I forgot to talk about it in Vault Boys. There's a number that's on screen when Cooper Howard is talking about Vault Tech. He's doing the commercial for the vaults. The number it will be on screen right now is 213-258-2858. I called it, and you can also send it a text message. We're going to call it right now live on the show. Again, the number will be on screen during this portion of the show, but I wanted you guys to hear this. I don't think my Bluetooth is on. Let's hear this together. Put it on the speaker. And then it hangs up on you. Isn't that beautiful? when this happened, I paused the show and called it immediately. Like, you can't put a phone number on a screen. And not since District 9. District 9, that was their biggest marketing. Was like, if you see one of these prawn, you have to call this number. They put a number on screen and it wasn't a 555 number. And the first thing I did was I called it. And later on, I saw that you could text it, but I called it and I heard a guy screaming, and I didn't know, is that supposed to be the second the bombs drop and the guy is screaming because he's scared and possibly on fire, or is that going to be some sort of alluding to the next season? Are we going to hear those exact screams in the next season? Even if it's something small, like a pre-recorded holotape, even if the trailer that we get next has like a clip of that in it, whatever, it might lead nowhere. It might go absolutely nowhere. And I just think it's super interesting that it's a part of this world building. But like I said, you could text the number. So I texted that number and I said, "Hey, I'm Vince. I'm trying to meet Walton Goggins. Heard you could hook me up. Thank you for texting Vault Tech. The next available appointment is in 33 weeks from now. Please stand by. Press Y to get recurring marketing and other texts from Fallout and agree to community terms. Privacy, frequent varieties, your data, whatever, whatever." I said why. I said yes. "Congratulations. We may or may not get in touch if an appointment becomes available. Text stop to stop, help for help." And then I got sent, like, essentially if I go to send somebody, like, "Hey, man, could you send me Frank's number? I want to give him a ring. He owes me $35, and I just, you know, times are tough. I'm getting itchy. I need to get in contact with him." And I can't open the card, like the name card thing, because my phone's 7 years old and I'm an old man who refuses to get a new one. Not because I'm afraid of technology. I just don't want to spend $900 on a phone. And I text back, "That text won't open my phone. It's like a 7-year-old phone." And then I didn't hear anything back. But there was an ongoing theory, again, that I heard, I think on Twitter, that 33 weeks is either just like a wink wink to Vault 33, where Lucy's from, or in 33 weeks, sometime in November, we could text it again, or now that your number is associated with this service, we might be able to get a text from them again saying, like, "Hey, from your friends at Vault Tech, here's this." Either way, I love ARG stuff. Yes, a mystery. I love ARG stuff. If you tell me I have to learn about something in real time and there's a community of people trying to part things together, I am 4,000% in. Absolutely. Alan tutorial? I haven't thought about Alan tutorial in a while, but that thing ruined my life for a good while. And I got it at the end of it, but I was fascinated with every part of it. But hey, again, let me get that number for you. It's 213-258-2858. Again, it should have been on screen this whole time. Give it a ringle wrangle. Let me know if you got something different, because as far as I know, it's just screaming. So I want to talk about the lore, the Fallout lore. This is Atomic Radio Hour, the post-nuclear podcast, a show about the Fallout games. And I want to talk about this week's lore, but before I can talk about this week's lore, I have to thank the Patreon. Because of the Patreon, the show can continue to grow and get better. I can do fun stuff like this, where we have a live studio audience. You guys get to have your voice heard in what the lore is for the week. So there's some people that I have to thank. And starting at the top, I have to thank the OG Noah. Thank you, Noah. After Noah, I have to thank Marcus, who's here tonight. Thank you, Marcus. After Marcus, I have to thank Mellow Millhouse. Thank you to Mellow Millhouse. After Mellow Millhouse, I have to thank Captain Lennox. Thank you to Captain Lennox. And after Captain Lennox, the last person I have to thank is Danish Hound Dog. Thank you to Danish Hound Dog. If you guys like the show in any capacity, check out in the link in the description below. There is the link to the Patreon. And like I've said a couple times throughout this program, you can come watch the episodes get filmed live. There's your voice being heard. You know, you're just helping a small-time creator. You're helping someone who's trying to work for himself. Someone who's, you know, doing something with passion about something he loves. Again, thank you to the names on screen. I love you guys very, very much, and I appreciate you. Hey, so what I was thinking is there's so many new people in the community. There's so many new people. I saw today there was an Instagram post, I don't remember who it was from, saying, "I never played the Fallout games," or, "I played them once and I didn't like them, but the show makes me want to go back and try them again." So these games are 25 years old, over 25 years old. Fallout 1 came out in 97. Right? So I thought, you know what? Lucy's in the West Coast. The show takes place in the West. We're learning a bunch of new West Coast lore. We're learning a bunch of new pre-war lore. Why don't we go back to where it all began, right? Why don't we go back to the beginning? Why don't we go back to the origins of Fallout? And there's two things that popped into my head when I think about the first Fallout. I think about how civilization is slowly starting to come back and how we have underground criminal organizations that are just shooting at each other with little pea shooters trying to claim their spot as King of the Hill. And we also have giant mutants that are stronger, some are smarter, have more endurance, more, I can't even say virile because they can't reproduce, but these are super soldiers. They're hulking masses of men. So if you'd like to hear any lore, and I mean any lore whatsoever from the Fallout franchise, from the games, the show, the one comic book that they made, if you want to hear any of it, check out the Patreon. There's a link in the description below. From the $1 tier to the $10 tier, your voice is heard every single week when I ask a question on the Patreon. You vote for what you'd like to hear. And this week, I asked, would you rather hear about the underground, the criminal crime organization from the hub, or would you rather hear about Lieutenant, or just Lou, the master's right-hand man from the original Fallout? And this week, the Patreon chose Lieutenant from Fallout 1. Now, a little bit of backstory on who the Master is, what the Unity is, and why it's so important to the first game. Without spoiling anything for a 26-year-old game, a 27-year-old game, you leave the vault in search of a water chip in the first game. You find the water chip, and when you return to your Overseer, the vault dweller returns to the Overseer, Overseer Jackarin, who's never quite sure how to say his name. You explain to him that there's mutants out there, and he says, you should go out there and figure out what's up with these muties. And you go out, and you find out that these mutants are taking people so they can dip them in these vats of goo at the Mariposa military base, which is a very important location in the Fallout, in Fallout's history, it being essentially where the Brotherhood started. That's where the first Maxon was. He denounces his citizenship, he denounces his military status, and then the bombs drop. Shortly after he does that, he takes over and he slowly leaves once he finds out that the government, he renounced all of that and leaves after the bombs drop, but all of that was because he found out that the government was experimenting on humans with the forced evolutionary virus, right? So in comes the Master, who I have a bit of lore on. He's got a very long story. He was a human at one point in time. He went to go check out Mariposa with a small group of other Wastelanders, and he fell into a vat of goo. And when you meet him, he's an amalgamated mass of different humans and beings who is fused into an Overseer's chair at the Los Angeles vault, which is actually a prototype vault to show things off, which we'll probably see, honestly, in season 2 of Fallout on Prime. But the Master believes in the Unity, and the Unity is all humans being turned into super mutants. He believes that they're stronger, they are smarter. It depends on how much radiation you've been exposed to. If you've been exposed to a lot of radiation, your mutation can change. It also has stuff to do with your DNA, your genetics. Depending on how you are built, the FEV can really mess with you. And that's where we get a fella like Lieutenant. Now, his name is Lieutenant. He is the Lieutenant of the Master's Army. And sometimes he goes by Lieutenant, like his first name is Lou and his last name is Tenant, or just Lou, simply. And he's incredibly strong because he's a super mutant. I actually have written down his special stats here. He has a 10 strength, an 8 perception, a 10 endurance, a 4 charisma, an 8 intelligence, a 7 agility, and a 6 luck. Pretty great build, honestly. The charisma's whatever. It seems like charisma seems to be the dumb stat in most games, but great build, right? He's the commander of the Mariposa military base. He is the Master's right-hand man. He is the dude who is essentially like a mini-boss for the game. He's the second antagonist. Like, he's another person you have to get through to get to the Master. And he's intelligent. Most modern-day Fallout fans believe super mutants to be dumb, and that's really not the case. More super mutants, especially if they're Master's mutants, there's a couple different variants of mutants, but Master's mutants, more than likely, are more intelligent. You do have dumber ones, like Harry, who you meet in Necropolis. He's not the brightest, you can tell, but then you have individuals like Lieutenant, you have guys like Marcus from Jacobstown, you have the other super mutants that aren't just ready to fight and kill outside of Black Rock Mountain. The other super mutants that are at Jacobstown are super mutants that are looking for refuge. There will be a time, super mutants are kind of in the same realm as ghouls in the sense that we don't know how long they're going to live for, but they're bigger and they're smarter and they're stronger. And when it comes to Lieutenant, he is the pinnacle of what makes a super mutant. He's faster, he's tougher, he's more intelligent. He was the strongest one out of his group to be dipped into the vats to come out. And he genuinely believes that super mutants will inherit the Earth. He believes when all humans, or as they refer to them as normals, once they're all gone, it'll be a super mutant world exclusively. Now, a big problem with this that you can kind of talk to the master about is that if you can't reproduce, they're sterile. It's never said whether they even have reproductive organs. Super mutants are not male and they're not female. They seem masculine, but there's not a super mutant out there that has breasts. They're super mutants without shirts on. Yeah, we've seen them before, but they don't have like fatty breast tissue akin to biological women. Him believing in the master so fervently has developed a cult-like behavior. Now, the Unity is like a pseudo-religion. It's a belief system, right? So it's not like this is the way all things must be for everyone outside of the Unity. So if you're in the Master's army, the Unity, they believe that this is what they're doing. They believe wholeheartedly what they're doing is right. He's been rewarded for his devotion with cybernetic implants and personalized equipment. So there's probably a picture of him on screen, or there's been a picture of him on screen. There's been something on screen about Lieutenant. He has an eye that is cybernetic, showing that depending on the definition of it, synths kind of have existed in the series forever. Cyborgs, they were originally called cyborgs. They were also called androids. And then they were called synths. So it's kind of a gray area of where it is. And super mutants are based on human DNA. So I would assume you could make a synth super mutant. I don't know why you'd want to, but you could. If you can make them intelligent, great. But if you make them too intelligent and they find out that they're synths, they might go on a killing spree and they're super mutants. They're really hard to take down. Like incredibly hard to take down, especially Fallout 1 times, incredibly hard to take down. You can ask him about his devotion to the master. The Vault Dweller can say, "How did you come to work for him in regards to the master?" And Lieutenant will say, "Fate, luck of the draw. I was the strongest of my batch to be dipped in the virus, and I've always supported the ideals of the Unity and the master, for he is right. And my devotion has been rewarded." Now, again, like I said before, there are genuine super mutants that aren't just hulking masses of an IQ that is room temp. They can form thoughts. Marcus forms after, so little extra lore for you. Marcus, who's a super mutant, who was a high-ranking soldier in the Master's Unity, when the Unity collapses, when the Vault Dweller takes down the Master, most of the mutants head eastward. That's why you don't see a lot of them in New Vegas. There's a very small pocket of super mutants. And Marcus actually meets up with a Brotherhood soldier, a knight, I believe, and his name is Jacob, and they become friends, and Marcus would argue the Unity, and Jacob would argue the Brotherhood, and they became friendly this way. Marcus is one of the oldest people in the games, and also one of the smartest people to ever be in the game. So if you're playing New Vegas for the first time, head up to Jacobstown and see a character who has an immense, immense amount of history and lore. And also, there's a lore video on the channel here that you can go ahead and check out. They're no longer human, but they're no longer human the way ghouls are no longer human. They're based on human DNA. Ghouls are technically post-necrotic humans. Super mutants are technically mutated humans, because you can't just, like alchemy, pull out a super mutant out of your ass. They're built on humans. They're humans dunked into tanks of FEV, right? So I believe that Lieutenant keeps a little bit of his humanity. I feel like the best super mutants do keep a little bit of their humanity. Again, using Marcus as an example, he starts Jacobstown to help find out why the Nightkin are developing schizophrenia, right? So part of him believes that torture is barbaric, but it also gives him some sort of satisfaction. The super mutants are looking for pure humans because if you dip a pure human in FEV, they come out more like he does. Less contaminated, smarter, stronger, all the positives. And Luke can say, "Let me check. Why, yes, I almost laughed. How wonderfully humorous. The only place you're going is in the vat. But first, you'll tell me where your vault is. And the vault dweller can say, I hope you can take rejection. Lou. Well, we'll see about that. And then he punches the vault dweller. This man with 10 strength and 112% melee damage. The way the original Fallout games work, it goes higher than 100%, like in your stats. He punches him and says, feel better now? Since torture is such a crass yet oddly satisfying and effective technique, I'll ask you once more nicely, where is the vault? So if you find yourself in contact with Lou and your first time playing it, you can get close enough to him and hear a conversation between him and a fellow named Van Hagen, which will talk about the discovery of Vault 13, and just hearing that alone is worth 1,500 experience points. I'm telling you this if you've never played these before, because Fallout 1 is an incredibly hard game. I've been trying to beat this game for years. Now, you can ask. That's a nice thing about these games being on PC. I get all of my lore off of fallout.fandom.com, the Nukipedia, if you will, and for a little bit of this, I would like to read it directly off. There are quotes that I would like to read directly off of the wiki. Some of the nice things about Fallout 1 and 2 being PC games, exclusively PC games, is there an option to type things in to ask about the world. So if you know a little bit and you know you can trigger things, you can kind of trigger things in a certain order and you can do them ahead of time. So if you ask him about the Unity, he says, the Unity is the goal of all supermutants. Through the FEV virus, we will bring all humanity together in peace. If you ask him about FEV, he'll say, the FEV virus was discovered by the Master many years ago. It is what makes us the chosen ones. But you'll soon learn that, I assure you. The Master? He's the father to us all. The Cathedral? If you ask him about that, he'll say, nothing but a device to further our plans. No matter, all humans will be chosen or dead. If you ask him about the vats, he'll say, the vats are where the FEV is stored and where you normals become one of us. Of course, some die horribly, excruciatingly painful deaths, but, well, those are the breaks. Normals, they are humans who have not been exposed to radiation. They tend to be far better in the vats than others. You're a perfect example of this. If you ask him about the vaults, he'll say they were constructed before the war. They are also our main source of prime normals. Someone who is completely untouched is referred to as a prime normal. If you ask him about Morpheus, he'll say, Morpheus, it's quite amusing. He thinks he's so much more than just a slug the Master recruited to head his Children of the Cathedral nonsense. Well, he too will be dipped into the vats, and he'll probably die a horrible death. I hope. If you kill him, he has a unique death animation where he falls apart, and it's implied by this death animation, other than just his eye, that the Master has been doing augmentations to him to build him up to be an even stronger super mutant. In New Vegas, when you're doing GI Blues, if you ask Wayne about being attacked, he'll say one of the guy's name was Lou, and he was dumber than a mutant. It might be a quick little one-off reference to Lieutenant from Fallout 1, but it's one of those, eh. If you ask me, it's more like wordplay than anything else. Lieutenant is a character that I really enjoy. Him and Harry I really, really like, because it shows you the two kinds of mutants, but also it gives the mutants depth. They're not just, hey, we're big and dumb and swing and shoot. Lieutenant has a Gatling laser. Not a lot of the other mutants have that. So he's special, and you get to kind of see a hierarchy, a dichotomy amongst the other mutants. And I hope you've enjoyed that piece of Fallout 1 lore, because that has been this week's lore. Hey gang, the following part is going to contain some spoilers for Fallout on Prime, so if you don't want to hear it, totally understand, mute the video and let it run so I get that retention time, please. Or you could click off. I have a bunch of other videos. There's a bunch of other great stuff on YouTube that you can watch. Today I found a show called Last Meal, and I've been watching it religiously. It's a show about death and food, my two favorite subjects. Two of my favorite subjects, I should say. So I saw this. TKS Mantis had retweeted something from IGN saying, Todd Howard confirms that Shady Sands was nuked after the events of Fallout New Vegas. In a new interview, it seems one of the biggest issues people had with the timeline has now been solved. This is something that I feel like I got instantly when I saw the chalkboard was that arrow. One of the best memes I saw about it is the arrow, and it was just the arrow, and it says, retweet this to scare a New Vegas fan. The fall of Shady Sands would imply that, because it says 2277, that's when the first battle of Hoover Dam starts. That would just, to me, imply that that first battle of Kimball's War is what started to kill the NCR as we knew it. Then it got nuked sometime later, but we're not given a date. Now, according to Howard, showrunner Graham Winger and Geneva Robertson Deuter came to him with the idea to blow up Shady Sands, something Howard says shocked him at first, but the event would serve as a catalyst for the main characters of the Fallout show, and the showrunner worked with Howard and the Bethesda team to ensure it remained consistent with the game. And we talked it through, and it was. This would be a pretty impactful story moment that a lot of things anchor on, Howard says. But for anyone confused about how the city could be blown up by the time the show takes place, Howard explains all the details of the timeline should line up. We're careful about the timeline, he says. There might be a little bit of confusion in some places, but everything that happened in the previous game, including New Vegas, happened. We are very careful about that. All I can say is we're threading it tighter there, but the bombs fall right after... the bombs fall just after the events of New Vegas. New Vegas is canon. New Vegas happened. Boone happened. Cass happened. Lily Bowen happened. The ghouls that want to fly to space all happened. These are all things that why wouldn't they happen? There's always been the meme that Bethesda didn't like New Vegas because they didn't make it, and it was regarded as the best game in the series, but we don't know that to be true, and they've been selling NCR stuff and New Vegas stuff on the website left and right, so why wouldn't it be canon? Like, why would you think it wouldn't be canon? Tim Kaine, I feel like, said it the best. I don't even remember exactly how he said it, and this is a paraphrase of what I remember from it, but essentially it was, he loved the show, dude created Fallout and loves the show, and also said, people are building a world with this show. They're building a story for you to enjoy. Not everything is going to be explained to you right away. New Vegas is canon. And I'm just so happy New Vegas is canon, just because it's a great game. But also, I didn't want it to invalidate other people's experiences by it just not being a thing. But also, I kind of think that New Vegas, like the chalkboard showing 2277 to the nuke, was done to be ambiguous on person because they knew people were going to talk about it. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just kind of my assumption. So New Vegas is canon. It never wasn't canon. The show is fantastic. I think what you should do, now that we all know that New Vegas is canon, is just go play more New Vegas. Like, I'm playing it now, and I'm trying to do a survival, either unarmed melee run, and I think I'm going to do an independent Vegas because I've never done independent, or not independent, excuse me. I'm going to go completely house. Because I've done Caesar and I've done Yes Man. I think I'm going to go completely house. And I got to save at a certain point so I can go and do all the NCR stuff because I need the achievement. Because now I'm going to go and get all the achievements for New Vegas because I just did it for 3. So I'm going to have to go in and get all the shit I need to get and then be like, bada boom, bada bing, ring a ding ding. Here we go. That was a fun fling. Look at me. I'm like a regular two quarters. My God. Thank you for joining us this week. My name has been Vince. This has been Atomic Radio Hour, the post-nuclear podcast. Show the dives in the records is post-apocalyptic. The intro song is by the one and only Shane Ivers. It's called Feather Duster. You can get all of his tracks, including Feather Duster, on his website, silvermansounds.com/free music, where all of his music is free. It's licensable. It's a great website. He's a great fella. In the description below, there's going to be a link to the Patreon. Check out the Patreon if you like the show to support it a little bit. You could even watch these episodes get recorded live, and your voice is always heard when it comes time to pick a lore. There's also a link to my Twitter, the show's Twitter, and Kyle's Twitter. Also a Redbubble. If you like the design, you like the Atomic Radio Hour microphone Atom logo, you can get a design there. Bunch of cool stuff. I stream on Twitch. There's a link for that as well. It's been a while since I've done it, but hey, who knows? Maybe today, maybe tomorrow, who knows? I love you. You look fantastic. Thank you for spending an amount of time with me this week. I hope your day has been great. I hope your week has been nice. Call somebody you love, and I'll be speaking with you next week. Bye, everybody.
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
This has been a production made by your friends at Ghoulman Entertainment.